Okay, we're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order at 5:30. And we're going to start with roll call. Marty Gator. Go ahead and say here or acknowledge. I did see Marty on the screen, so I'm going to go ahead and check him off. Marianne Nolte.
I am here.
I know Marianne is here as well. See her, so I will check her off the seat here. Mike Eister.
Here.
Vidal Francis.
I'm online here. Thank you.
Brianna Hensley. Counselor Evans. Do not see Counselor Evans on yet. Philip Shimu. Philip Shimu, pardon. See Philip. Elaine Eller Moo. Pete Knox.
Here.
Claire Sarrett.
Here.
Hoover Chambliss. Kathy Dusing. And Gino Grimaldi.
Hoover is in process.
Hoover is in process. Perfect. And I'm going to acknowledge ahead of time that I might pronounce names incorrectly. Please, I will reach out to me so I can make sure I pronounce your name correctly next time. I apologize ahead of time to anyone for whom I mispronounced your name. Okay. I have no preliminary remarks at this time, but for announcements and agendas to add to the additions to the agenda, we have Pat Walsh that would like to share something. I think he has just stepped out, so I will bring him back up in a second. So we have opportunities for audience participation. Are there folks who would like to share at this point?
Hey, hi, I'm Rob Zako. I'm Executive Director of Better Eugene's Maple Transformation. It's good to be here in person. I want to talk to you about my friend Lynn Peterson. She was my predecessor, 1,000 Friends of Oregon, as the transformation advocate. She went on to be Governor John Kitzhaber's transformation policy advisor. She worked for Jay Inslee as the head of WSDOT, the Washington State Department of Transportation. She's currently president of the Metro Council, the regional land use transportation planning government up in the Portland area. And she published this book called Roadways for People, Rethinking Transportation Plan Engineering. I'm going to pass this around just to, not to give you, but you can just sort of take a look at it. So she calls me up a few weeks ago and says, Rob, I've got this new book about rethinking transportation. You know, could you help me set up some sort of speaking event? You know, Eugene, maybe invite a few of your friends so we could have like sort of a conversation about transportation. So I called my friend Peter DeFazio. And I called my friend Jameson Otten. I said, how about we get together? We talk about transportation. So we're having this event on April 10th at the University of Oregon. I'm going to pass this around too. There's a QR code here. If you scan that, you can go straight to register for this. It's a free event. We've got 150 seats planned right now, but 110 of them have already been snatched up 2 weeks away. I urge you, if you're interested, to sign up and reserve your seat. We don't want to turn anybody away. There may be standing room only. There's going to be free food. We've got some great sponsors. We're going to have some tables of information. Liz is going to be signing her book. That's all I got to say. It should be fun.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate that.
You can keep the flyer or whatever, but I want the book back.
I want to give the book back to you. Thank you. Anyone else? Any other public comment from anyone online?
No.
Thank you. Thanks, Rob. Thanks, everyone, for sharing. We are going to switch a couple things around on the agenda today, and we're going to start with the fleet procurement scenario with Matt, and we'll do Tom next. So, Matt, go ahead.
Hi,
Thanks, everybody. I'll sit at the table. I hope just to start the presentation and let you guys know through this conversation, it really is a conversation. Love if you have a question in the moment to stop me to get more clarification for sure. I cannot see audiences behind me, so maybe look at your guys' eyes and if you see, give me a little ear nug or whatever it means to identify. But we will go through this presentation. And what we're talking about is a fleet procurement scenario. So LTD initiated a procurement a while back to kind of take a look at what are some of the scenarios that we can have for some of our bus purchases. We want to be good stewards. We have a draw, obviously, to look at, you know, how our impacts and sustainability as a transportation company impacts those things. So as we're looking at and seeing the future of propulsion technology, we see opportunities, and we want to. I looked at some.
Just about time's up.
Okay.
So I will.
Yeah. It's Joyce Technology. We just go with the flow. And
okay, I can talk over that if you guys are comfortable with that.
I'm okay.
Okay. So as we look and we're seeing the continued investment, we wanted to look at it. So next slide, we'll kind of, and I don't believe this is my, oh, so on the presentation, we'll be looking, it looks like at the Roku TV. I can talk through this too. So on the Roku, and then when we get to the fun graphs, we'll do it. So really the outline, we're talking about project methodology, what we're looking at, or the project background. We'll identify then the project methodology and talk about results after that, our summary, and then the last is really our staff next steps. So that's slide two. I will move on to slide three, which really is just the highlight for project background. I can do some mana light stuff. So the project background, if we're looking at project timeline in November or February 2022. Next slide.
Amazing.
And I'll stand up for this now. Thank you, guys. So as we look at, we initiated a phase one. We'll talk more about what phase one looked like. And that was in February. We ended it. And we're looking at how to kind of transition to the phase two, really a deeper dive in regards to what we're looking like from an assumption. So we have these large assumptions. We narrowed it down so that we're not looking at everything, but looking at things that are feasible. Then we'll go through the scenarios development. We'll talk through that. And then we kind of get to the place of the end of this last calendar year of the December 22 of looking at what the 15-year fleet procurement plan can look like. So there's the timeline. The next slide, we'll dive deeper into what does it look like from phase one. So in phase one, we looked at a lot of things. Renewable diesel, like R50, they call it. So that's about that's 50% fossil fuels, 50% renewable. So they call it R50 in general. And we look at R99, which is a diesel, but it's really fossil-free diesel, 99%. So it's a very attractive thing. That is something LTD has been using for quite some time. We've transitioned from just our regular biodiesel, which is what the state of Oregon requires, is a 5% biodiesel, but regular diesel, and we transition to renewable. We looked at hydrogen. We looked at RNG, which is renewable natural gas. So it's a CNG propulsion technology, but we're buying credits for renewable natural gas. And then the last one at phase one is electricity. So we took what's on the market and really said, let's look at what's moving forward. And so when we brought stuff forward, it's the stuff that you see on the, what would be on your right side, as R99, hydrogen, renewable natural gas, and then electricity. Next slide. So our methodology on this project is, you know, we shortlisted the technology, looking at different scenarios, and some of the scenarios, right, so currently we have a fueling station, a diesel fueling station, so as you look at scenarios, if we went to a hydrogen bus or went to a renewable natural gas, there's infrastructure that's accompanied with that. Similarly with electric buses, you have infrastructure that needs to be accompanied so you can actually run those. So there's the construction schedule that impacts vehicle purchases. Then you have a vehicle purchase schedule. So we just went to the board. I know Pete said that he listened to it, but it's about an 18-month lead time sometimes for getting buses. Longer for some propulsion technology, but you account for that in your scenarios as well. So I don't go to the parking lot and say, or the Kindle or any other provider here that would buy a vehicle. You have to be planned out far in advance. So we identified the vehicle procurement schedule. Then we look at the emissions analysis. So different propulsion types have different emissions, as we'll see. And then lastly, the life cycle cost. So let's take a look at the emissions, but also what's the life cycle cost as we look at supporting a propulsion type. And you'll see that later in later slides. Next slide, please. All right. So this is a little bit detailed, more detailed, but looking at the technologies and scenarios, you have a vehicle inventory. Currently LTD, it's about 100 vehicles. So our assumptions is looking at 100 vehicles. And as you look at scenarios, you're continuing to identify that same amount of vehicles. So as the replacement is you're replacing one bus for one bus. So it's a one-to-one ratio. Talked about procurement schedule, but then as you're looking at the analysis, we had a sustainability tool. So a lot of these fuels have different carbon intensities and different impacts as far as what from a sustainability factor we wanted to bring into that. So we brought that in from a fuel use, but also a fuel production pathways. The state of Oregon has those pathways really identified for that. Environmental costs fed into also the life cycle costs. And that's where we'll spend most of our time is looking at those life cycle costs that are taking the capital assets, but also the operation and maintenance, as well as your disposal. So disposal, there is cost associated with that. So when you dispose of a bus, sometimes you can get money back, but sometimes as you're looking at environmental costs for batteries and looking at disposing those, there's actually a cost associated with that. There are some recyclers that are looking at that, but there are some costs with the disposal that we took into consideration. Any questions so far? And I feel like I'm really loud, so apologize.
Yeah, so you said you assume a one-to-one replacement. So you have 100 buses now, and you're assuming 100 in the future. How far out is the scenario planning going in terms of years, and why wouldn't you assume some growth in your fleet?
That's a great question. So from a replacement strategy, it's a one-to-one, just so I'm not going to buy two buses to replace one. From looking at a service planning as far as what's our growth as an agency, that would be a different kind of analysis. So you're just assuming, just staying at the baseline to identify a baseline strategy for that replacement as you're looking at those life cycle costs of buses. So that's it's a different exercise as far as what's LTE's growth as an agency for different modes, different buses. That would be a different exercise. Great question.
So then I assume, Matt, that part of the implication of what you just said is that if a bus costs 50% more than the current buses, to replace that would cost a lot more than one-to-one.
Yeah, so I think we'll get into some of the numbers that might be where we'll answer, but from the assumption-based standpoint is yes, one bus, we're disposing one bus, we're gonna replace it with another bus. So some of the complications will come in and, you know, an electric bus doesn't get the miles we need for service, like just a regular diesel bus or some of the other propulsion. So you've taken that, that's a different really analysis in regards to what we're looking like as well, but high level staying at the one-to-one ratio is what we did for this exercise.
Thanks.
Great question.
And so, it looks like we might have a comment, or I just want to make sure we look at the chat. Do you mind checking on that really quick?
Great, thank you.
Okay, I don't think it's a question.
No, I think it was just
thank you. Sorry, Matt, I just wanted to make sure of that.
I appreciate it. It is. Sounds like someone's trying to talk on the owl, is that correct?
Does someone online have a comment?
Maybe it was just me moving the mic. So next slide is we'll continue to set the stage of what we're looking at as far as those buses. I said we had 100 buses that we're looking at. So next slide will identify kind of some of those as we step into the results. But just to outlay kind of these two things is this is really looking like our 40-foot buses. So LTD currently has 65 40-foot buses, predominantly more than our 60-foot buses, which is represented in this area as well as 35. So we continue to keep the same length as well when we're looking at it. So if we're having a 60-foot bus, we're replacing it with a 60-foot bus just to be consistent. And here's where it just looks at as you're looking at 15 years, there is going to be a transition of propulsion types in this scenario. One other thing, you see different colors, you know, green, yellow, orange. This really identifies what that propulsion is. So LTD has 30, what we're assuming 30 electric buses, 30 diesel hybrid buses, and then 5 diesel buses or internal combustion engine buses. Similarly, 29 hybrid, 6 diesel. And as you look at just the top graph and the bottom graph, I wouldn't get too distracted, but you're seeing bars increase as well as bars decreasing. So as you're looking at a replacement cycle of at least a minimum of 12 years replacement, you're going to be purchasing one vehicle propulsion type with another to kind of outlay what that looks like. And this is helping with the assumption of what our environmental costs as well as our life cycle costs are. Next slide. And so the baseline, there's many graphs because as you look at that graph or that propulsion, every time you purchase a vehicle, you're actually getting benefit, added benefit from a greenhouse gas emission standpoint. So as you see, we had to have some sort of baseline. And our baseline really looked at, we're just continuing to run just R99 diesel. So that establishes our baseline for what we're looking like. And then you have, and I don't know if we can move maybe the mute button, but you'll see different lines, and maybe I can just talk.
Yep, sorry.
No worries. You see the baseline, and the baseline really drops off, and then you kind of see this highlighted, and the dips are when larger purchases come, and then you continue to stay flat. And this is looking at greenhouse gas emissions. So one thing just to point out is, our baseline, R99, you're seeing two different, which is the RNG, renewable natural gas, as well as the fuel cell electric bus or your hydrogen buses. You're actually producing more greenhouse gas emissions based upon factors that put in. Whereas the one where you're seeing a decrease or what would be below the line is your electric, battery electric buses. That's not the whole story. So as we look at the next slide, you'll see, so your greenhouse gas emissions, but there are benefits from baseline. If you look at NOx, nitrous oxide, you'll see some decreases when you're looking at your fuel cell hydrogen bus. I'll get renewable natural gas as well as the bus battery electric. Pete, you have a question?
So I just want to clarify here. You're just looking at the emissions for the bus itself. You're not looking at like the battery electric. You're not asking how is that energy being generated or how is that hydrogen being generated or natural gas. Just looking at the emissions from the bus, right?
Yeah. So doing something, the fuel source is included, right? So the Oregon for R99, your carbon intensity for that is relatively low. So you are taking a look at that for our battery electric buses. They're really good because your fuel source is really from a renewable source to from electricity. So we are taking those carbon intensity impacts for that. But you're not going further upstream as far as the production of maybe batteries or the production of the full-time bus. You're just taking in the fuel source as well as how it runs. So I would say that assumption is you are taking a look at that. So whether it's hydrogen, whether it's battery electric, whether it's RNG, you're accounting for those fuel source propulsion. Thanks. Does that help?
Yeah, because we know that I watched a presentation from Mason in California. They've actually almost doubled and tripled down on hydrogen, and But one of the things they're saying is that it's so much more expensive, but there's like three or four different ways you can generate. And some of them are more energy intensive than others, and some of them are actually more environmentally damaging than others. So
it's good. That's great. So hydrogen, like, and I'm not an expert, but I can talk high level, right? They call it different colors, right, of what hydrogen. So some hydrogen that you're creating is renewable. I believe they call that green hydrogen, but then there's blue and then there's brown, different colors. So your hydrogen that may be created from a coal plant or some other diesel plant has a higher carbon intensity than what you would do on hydrogen. So AC Transit, we've spent time in many conversations, we have a relationship with them. Their concern right now is, well, where are they getting that? What type of color of hydrogen is it? And at this point, they're like, it really doesn't matter because they just need to get hydrogen to fuel that. So whether it's brown, green, or blue, they just need hydrogen to fuel their buses to continue to deliver. They are doubling down, and I can't speak fully on there, but it's a range conversation that they're having is, you know, a battery electric can get a certain amount of range where hydrogen does extend that out a little bit. So great, great point. AC Transit has some great work that they're doing and that they're publishing. Thanks.
We have a question.
Okay.
You have a question?
I do. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the presentation. It's pretty good. Just a general question. Are there any considerations given to the let's just say how harsh the bus route could be in affecting these different types of buses, if you will? For example, maybe the intervals between stops are longer or shorter, which could affect how the bus would run over time. Maybe, let's just say, longer distance runs, if you will. Have we given any consideration on the routes themselves in affecting how that bus operates in terms of maintenance or long-term usage?
I would say we don't get into that granular at this stage, right? We did take into consideration of a one-to-one ratio, and we've had another kind of high-level look specifically at the battery electric buses. And I don't know if that's where you're coming from, but a battery electric bus driving down the highway or Cottage Grove, right, or some of the longer routes, you're not going to be able to travel as far. One, it's harsh if you're going 55 on those buses. Your range is impacted. You don't also get the benefit of regenerative braking. But for this, we did not go into that detail, but we have a high level understanding of what that can impact in regards to what those buses can do.
Thank you. That's good enough. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you. And any other? I don't want to miss out on the PM10 because it. You'll see the blue line, which is more predominant. Behind that blue line is actually your baseline for just the diesel. And then similarly on the green line, it's both. You have battery electric as well as fuel cells. So you're seeing a drop in your particulate matter 10 and below. So you do see a benefit there. Next slide. This is a slide really to kind of talk about and I hope you guys have questions if I don't answer them, but this is now taking a look at the life cycle costs over those. So your baseline, which I talked about, is your just continue to run your R99, your diesel fuel, the renewable diesel. Then you have your battery electric, where you're seeing it increase a lot. And then you see your hydrogen, which is increased the most expensive. And then on the far right, you have your renewable natural gas, which you see a decrease in regards to the overall life cycle cost when you look at your baseline versus RNG. So you're seeing any choices to go to maybe a zero tailpipe emissions, that there is an added cost when you look at the overall life cycle cost. Going back to what some people have hinted at a little bit is with your battery electric buses, in all honesty, with the technology today, and we're actually struggling with it, it's not a one-to-one ratio. So as LTD looks from a service planning standpoint, we're coming to very difficult like implications. Is an electric bus right now cannot go out into service for the whole entire day for routes, sometimes even greater than 100 miles. And so you're having to bring that bus back or figure out how to bring it back into the shop to then get another vehicle out there. So when we talked about the one-to-one ratio, it's not reality based upon our service delivery today. And as you look down into the future, the what you're needing to use from an energy consumption to deliver those miles is you hope that it's getting better, but we're not seeing that trend. And then the other hard thing, not only based upon the topography or where you're driving electric vehicles, it also is, you know, and it has a lot to do with weather. So in the colder months right now, your range drastically decreases. But in the summer, when we're more mild in June, July, our range is actually relatively good. But as service planners, and Tom has to deal with this more than I, is it becomes very difficult because now you're trying to figure out, like, in summer, it works great, but we don't just run service. And actually, most of our service based upon our delivery with colleges, our peak buses are found in the winter months where we want to continue to be as most effective and efficient with our resources. So it becomes difficult. This doesn't get into that granularity because we still assume just a one-to-one ratio. But I will just say, based on experience and what we're feeling right now, we are having a tough time if we're thinking 30 buses are going to be out all day. So that's the battery electric. Hydrogen, and going back to the AC transit kind of thing, Pete, that you mentioned, is hydrogen allows you to extend the range for that. It still doesn't meet a diesel vehicle, but it does get you a little bit further. There's ranges about 250 miles, and that would help service delivery, and it doesn't have that amount of fluctuation, but it does help when comparing to battery electric vehicle. And then RNG, again, has the lowest. I'll pause a little bit to see if there's any specific questions that I can answer on this, and note that I overlooked, right, the capital costs, which are in the orange. The capital costs are a lot more expensive, not only for the fueling station you would need for a battery electric, our hydrogen is RNG versus your baseline. Yes, Pete.
So on the battery electric buses, are in your life cycle cost analysis, are you including the cost of replacing the batteries like halfway through its essential life?
Yeah, we took in the capital costs, assuming that we are going to need to do that. So great point, like with your batteries or any lithium ion technology, at some point you're going to have degradation of that and you need to replace those to continue to maximize that. So the assumption is what they call a midlife of that. And so midlifing that to ensure that you can continue to get what FTA and other organizations calls a minimum useful life. So when we purchase a vehicle, it has to meet a certain minimum. And for FTA, and what we're falling in under is 12 years minimum of service life or 500,000 miles. So to get that 12 years, we did include that in assumptions.
You have another online question for me.
I don't have a question so much as an observation So, there's a struggle around battery electric, the range, the weather. From this, the RNG is less expensive than baseline, but then it also has downsides in that it's higher in its overall GHG emissions over time. So is that being taken into account?
That is a great question and observation. So as we're looking at the overall pie, this is looking at you're going to RNG, right? And you're going to do that for the life of that plan is for 15 years, you're going to transition from your baseline to RNG. As we, and you'll get to staff recommendations later on, but as we were looking at that, it doesn't make sense for a transit agency our size to transition to RNG, which likely we're seeing as you're observing, there's going to be a move to some other zero emissions. So to get RNG and bring RNG in here, there's a couple complications. It's we'd have to build a fueling station on site. And so those capital costs would be coming directly in like year one, two, or three to get that fueling. And then you'd have to train technicians to then now transition. Now it's another added propulsion type. And so as we'll get to our recommendation, it might be the sticking with the baseline, spoiler alert, because of that is there's not that upfront initial cost that you have to pay to then likely transition to another propulsion type. So wonderful question. And going back to, there's other states that are mandating a particular transition. So in California, there are a lot of people went to RNG, CNG technology that are now having to be transitioned to hydrogen or battery electric. Yeah, great. So and these are large numbers. And last time I presented, I didn't kind of bring this down a little bit. So LTD actually just, we went to the board last month to, actually this month, I'm sorry, to get authorization for 7 diesel buses running on renewable diesel. And we got a project for 7, and we asked the board for just over $7 million. If we chose to go with a hybrid solution, that would add just about $250,000 more per bus. So if you're looking at large scales, you know, you're talking about, I wish I could do the math really quickly, Tom. We're just 3.25, but you're talking 3 million, a substantial amount of money just for that technology. And then if you look at a battery electric bus, that's actually, each bus is over $500,000, $550,000 more per bus. And so as you're looking at large scale dollars, and then you're bringing those large scale dollars to today, the decision is a relatively large cost for the initial purchase. So I didn't want to lose sight of that. Yes. We have an online there. I think they've been waiting for a little bit.
Yeah, I think you kind of answered my question there. I was going to ask, the electric bus that you were referring to on the slides there, that's 100% electric and not a hybrid system, correct?
Yeah, that is a correct. The battery electric is 100%.
Yeah.
Great question and clarification.
So is there any regulatory implication that needs to be factored in? Does the state get mandate anything in the next 5 years, 10 years or something that has implications for this plan?
Great question. So if we went to RNG, if LTD decided, hey, we want to transition that propulsion, I would say there'd be some things as you're looking out in the future that could be a complication. Sticking with baseline, no, there's not a complication, but there may be for future purchases where you need to pivot. Great question. But for now, no, there's no regulatory thing that says you can't buy a diesel. Wonderful questions. I think we can go on to summaries and consideration, unless you guys have any additional questions on that. Okay, next 2 slides, we'll pass off that quickly. So really in summary, if you're just isolating some of those things, so if greenhouse gases, that's what you're looking at. There's 2 clear kind of things that check the box, right? You have 1 of battery electric that checks the box for greenhouse gas emissions. When you look at the local air pollutants of PM10 as well as the NOx, the battery electric as well as the hydrogen checks those particular boxes. From the cost, the environmental cost, battery electric is the one that gets checked. But then you look at what capital costs are for, you know, what we're looking at, fuel stations or other things. Your diesel sticking with your baseline makes sense. And then the operating and total cost, and this is goes back to what Claire, you said, is RNG actually is the one that checks those particular boxes. But the things that we're navigating goes back to what I was referencing as far as technicians, as well as maybe potential pivots. In regards to what does that look like and to maintain those type of additional fuel requirements or promotion. And then do I have a fair question? Okay. The next one, just really in summary, again, is the hydrogen. Currently, there's really 2 people in the market for providing those vehicles. So you don't have a huge market currently for hydrogen. It's a burgeoning technology. Battery electric, you have a longer lead time. I talked about earlier about an 18-month is kind of what we're looking at for just straight diesel. But with the battery electric, you're seeing that further and further pushed out just because of upstream, like supply chain issues that I think we're all seeing and experiencing. Your range on battery is significantly shorter. You're having a difficult time keeping those on the road. Fueling type, your RNG is dependent upon technology. They have an overnight slow fill, and then there's just a fast fill. And those things are, for RNG, comparable to diesel, so you plug it in, but that again brings in a different propulsion type. Storage space is a good point for RNG, hydrogen, as well as batteries. Where do you store those types of additional things? If you're familiar with our lot, we're kind of our space constraints, and we have some stacked in bus parking to maximize that as much as possible for the vehicles we have. And then policy, and then don't want to not highlight this, is there seems to be not as much support for that. You're seeing a lot of investments in some of the other technologies. Next. Yes.
So you said that just earlier this month, the board authorized a purchase of 7.
Yeah.
When will the next round of purchases likely occur?
You know, I think it'll be for 40-foot vehicles, and we're consistently coming before the board, part to deal with the long lead times. But I'd say before the end of the year, we'll be back with additional vehicle purchase requests.
And I recognize that we don't have a crystal ball, right, for these things. But as we're kind of getting these opportunities to Mike's question, look at opportunities to purchase. I mean, right now, he says, you know, hydrogen has there's two facilities or two producers of that technology. I'm assuming as technology changes and things become more accessible and battery, you know, all of that becomes more efficient, we'll be back to this conversation again to kind of be looking and thinking, again, no crystal balls, but recognizing that that's, with the decreasing support for fossil fuels, this is, the technology is going to be getting better. Things will continue to get better as we look ahead. So I'm stating the obvious, but just kind of like as a reminder that sometimes just thinking about how we're reacting and how we're looking at what we do now could impact longer term, and things will change as we go forward too. So
yeah, this conversation is to have a conversation. We'll be back before 15 years, I promise you that. But and then you'll see the next steps as we kind of talk about what are our next steps, and keeping a finger on the pulse of all things is critical, right, for us to still continue to deliver what we are as a transportation company. So next two slides, so here's the next steps. Absolutely. LTD will continue to explore emerging technologies and fuels for future bus purchases. We have to understand what's not just somebody says from a supplier's, but doing the deep dive in regards to, okay, how are we seeing this improvement technology? You see that with a lot of people coming to market that they're going to sell you something, but reality is a little bit different. So we're continuing to keep a finger on the pulse. We have great relationships with other transit agencies that are going down that pathway of hydrogen and all those things, as well as battery electric. And we have our own experiences with battery electric as we've walked through this journey as well. We'll continue to purchase renewable diesel for our fleet. That's a commitment we made back, and we continue to work with local agencies to purchase and have a contract to purchase renewable diesel with BWEB, Lake County, and other partner agencies to make sure we can get the fuel source, but also maximize it. And then the last one is, in the near term, we'll continue evaluating, but bringing forth diesel vehicle procurements, really for that, as what we stated, is looking at how can we continue to put service on the road, continue to lower our operational costs. Because every time if you pivot for having more expensive propulsion, the direct correlation is you're not putting this service on the road. Something has to give. And so as we look at that, as we see, and we've done a greenhouse gas analysis, the best thing for LTD to do is put service on the road to allow for people to get out of their single occupancy vehicle and jump on transit, to use transit. And from a community standpoint, you see the drive of the community greenhouse gas has come down, and we play a part in that. And allowing us to use and put service on the road versus supporting or lifting up a propulsion type is incredible and critical for decision making. Thank you very much. I think that's the end after additional questions.
Thank you.
Could we receive a copy of your presentation? Because the one in my packet is missing parts of the slides.
Oh, absolutely. We get someone will get that to you. I'm looking at somewhere over there, but absolutely, we have that. We can send that forward.
That'd be great.
Thank you.
Could I just make another point? The last point that Matt made about scholarship is really important. It's not just important because of environmental considerations. There's an equity issue. And as we think about service, at the core of and I'm going to be talking about mobility management in a broader sense, but at the core of our whole conversation is our frequent transit network. Along that frequent transit network are the majority of our communities of concern. And the more service we put out there, not only addresses the environmental issues, it starts addressing some of the equity issues as well. So that's the balance and trade-off we're trying to achieve here. We want to optimize the ability to reduce our footprint, but also address some of the travel issues in the region.
Thank you, Matt. Any questions or any other comments from the committee? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Tom, I'll have you go, but we passed over Pat for a quick update of addition to the agenda, so you can share that real quick, and then we'll transition over to Tom for our...
Thank you. Well, every year, LTD participates in the American Bus Benchmarking Group Fixed Route Survey. And it's LTD and about 24 other transit agencies across the country. And they measure customer satisfaction. That's everything from our on-time performance to how to the appearance of our bus operators. And then at the end, then usually in the fall, what happens is we get the results of that and we use those results to support our planning, marketing, and operational efforts. One of our responsibilities as an ABBG member is that we have to get out to the community and have people fill out the survey. Some good results I got tonight, I just shared with our executive team, is that the survey opened Monday. It closes the end of April. And we've already had 1,000 people, almost 1,000 people fill out the survey. But what I wanted to ask of all of you tonight is if you take some cards with you and give these to the people you know that ride the bus, and ask them to just scan the QR code and take the survey and enter them into a drawing for a gift card from Fred Meyer. So that'd be a way to help us make sure we get enough people to fill out the survey. Last year and the year before that, out of these 24 agencies, we had more people fill out the survey than anybody else. We had about 2,600 last year, 2,400 the year before. So we want to at least get that same number back. So I'll leave these here, and please feel free to take them and give them to your friends. I appreciate it. So thank you. Thank you, Chair, for letting me take a few minutes. Yeah, Mike.
I noticed you said distribute them to people who ride the bus. What about people who don't ride the bus?
Well, this is a passenger satisfaction survey.
Okay.
So I'm most interested in what they have to say. If you give them to anybody you want, we would prefer to have people that ride the bus.
All right.
They'll give us that snapshot, but give them to anybody. But yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Okay. Tom, you are up next.
All right. And I'm going to talk a little bit. And then at the end of our this agenda, I'm going to do a SWOT analysis with this group. And we're going to try and involve the people online. That will be interesting. But I'm going to give that a try. So what I want to talk about tonight is looking at moving forward with LTE pursuing being a mobility manager in the region. And we're characterizing that as LTE 2.0. And so what I want to do, and go ahead to the next slide, is just, you know, what is that? What's the context for us thinking about that? Want to look at the planning work program that we have and get some question and answer. And then based on kind of what you've absorbed and what you've seen, we'll have a SWOT analysis, an exercise looking at kind of what are the things today that you all see that we should be aware of in terms of strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats in moving down this path. I'll say we've conducted that analysis internally. We'll be taking you through this, and we're going to try and have a board go through that as well. So that will give us a really robust basis for our path forward. So to start, and some of you that saw Andrew's presentation the last month, this is the same context. You know, as we think about broader mobility, increasing fixed route service can move people efficiently. And I think we've talked before about the frequent transit network, the efficiency that MX has, you know, with the 10-minute frequency and builds ridership and all. But almost a third of the region is outside of the typical walking distance we look at. And then another third is more than 3 miles from transit. So we've been around for 52 years, been operating fixed route transit. You know, we have a good system by any kind of measure, but it's not catching all the population in our district. And it's probably not efficient to think about putting fixed route transit out, you know, think about the edges. And so we're looking at a broader range of mobility that can help people either connect to transit or access the things, the goods and services and people that they need to access outside of fixed route service. So go ahead. So as we think about what it means to be mobility manager, different group sector needs. So a lot of new mobility options don't necessarily serve everyone equally. Partnerships are going to be key. You know, we see ourselves as mobility managers, but we're not necessarily an operator of bike share, for example. So having partnership with Cascadia Mobility or, you know, whoever it might be, is going to be key to making that work. And then thinking about the whole life cycle. So we need to be looking out ahead and thinking about, you know, what it means to take this on. And we need to do some careful planning before we move forward. And so you, in your packet, you had a spreadsheet version of this. I had more detail on it than was needed, but we came up with this graphic as a way of really talking about, you know, where we're at today, the work that we need to do from a planning standpoint to really develop that strategic framework for being a mobility manager. And I'll just walk quickly through these. So the mobility management strategy. Some of you, and we came again to SPC, Andrew did a presentation on the work that we've been doing on our mobility management strategy. And again, the end product of that effort is actually a tool that we can use to consider the different opportunities and whether it's a good fit for us, whether it's a good fit for maybe a partnership, or maybe it doesn't necessarily fit in this region. But that tool is something we're putting the final touches on, and we'll be bringing it to the board for consideration in June. So this group will see the final version before we take that. The next project is the community outreach and communications assessment process that we're doing. That's not a cyclical kind of thing. We basically want to do a reset on how we engage the community. And that process will allow us to bring together community members, talk about basically what are the expectations the community has around being engaged in LT's business and plans, and how well are we meeting those expectations, and how can we come up with a framework that works across all the things that we do, whether it's an annual budget or the long-range transit plan or whatever. That's consistent, and people can have expectations about how they're going to be able to engage. So that process is going to take place over the next 18 months or so. We will have a community organization or a community committee council that we're going to put together to help us through that. The next item, the ROA right source operations analysis. So the right source operations analysis, if you're familiar with, we did a comprehensive operations analysis a couple of years ago. It's the same principle, but we've not really ever taken a hard look at right source in terms of how well we're operating. We know that we have some of the most advanced ways of engaging writers, people call in, and how all that technology matches people up and also allows for multiple sources of funding to pour into each ride. So we're looking at that, taking a step back, looking at what RideSource is and what it can do. I will say, we just went through the procurement process for this. For this project, and we were talking to the consultants that are going to start working on this about the fact that those vehicles, if you're not familiar with the ADA paratransit requirements, transit is required, the LTD is required to provide that service within a quarter mile of our routes. And so it's an on-demand service but what we talked about was, you know, in what ways might that fleet be more used more efficiently, effectively, in maybe doing some other kinds of service that they're not being used for this purpose. So we'll be looking at those kinds of things as part of that effort. The comprehensive operations analysis, the COA, that's intended to be a cyclical planning effort. So every 3 years, we'll take a step back, look at our operations and determine kind of how best to move forward to, again, improve the services that we're providing as part of that. The strategic business plan, some of you are familiar with that. That's something that we began a couple of years ago now. We're headed into our third year of, again, that's also a three-year cycle in terms of that. And the intent of the strategic business plan, it's something that many transit districts across the country are doing. It allows us to tie our bigger frame of mission, vision, values, goals, and objectives to what we're doing, I would say, day to day. So we've got a set of tactics that we're performing. Some of the things that we do every day, these aren't new things that we dreamed up. It's just we want to tie what we're doing day to day to larger goals. And that allows us to look at how we're doing. How can we improve those things? But how well are we meeting mission, vision, and values? So that's a process. And again, this group has received updates periodically on that. We'll be coming back to you in the next couple of months to give you kind of that how we're doing so far. Finally, the LRTP, the Long Range Transit Plan, is something that's intended to refresh the goals, objectives, and policies that we have. If you've looked at the Long Range Transit Plan that we have in place, it was developed between 2010 and 2012 for a variety of reasons. The board didn't adopt it until 2014. So it's, you know, if you look at it, I think there's still some good policy intent, but it doesn't reflect a lot of kind of what we know today around equity, for example, the way we think about service, certainly not, we weren't thinking about the mobility managers at that point in time. So, you know, some of the good things that came out of that effort were the two cities in particular, Eugene and Springfield, were updating their land use plans. The MPO was updating its regional transportation plan, and we were able to work with all of those partners to get the frequent transit network embedded in policy in all the plans. So now we have that policy, and the city of Eugene, of course, built its Envision Eugene plan on the frequent transit network. Those corridors that are included there around where growth is intended to be focused came out of that discussion about frequent transit. So we're making the right connections in the planning that we're doing now. This is an opportunity to really go through this cycle of planning, and kind of out of the other side, we're going to have a sense of what it means to be a building manager. So that's the intent. That's, and I just ask if you have questions.
So I'm still a little puzzled about mobility manager.
Okay.
And I see the elements of, I assume these are the elements of mobility manager. Does that mean that LTD has not been mobility managers in the past? Or?
No, I mean, and that's maybe part of it, is that I don't think we've recognized that we are mobility managers. The work that we do with RideSource, the work that we've done supporting BikeShare, and doing, you know, we were the ones that did the plan, self-selected, managed that project. So we've been, I guess, in that space, you'd say.
Yeah.
This is, I think, taking another step in terms of our involvement in trying to advance the efforts to have those various types of mobility in place. And again, with the objective of trying to tie in a large part of the community that doesn't really have good access to good job transit.
Well, what I'm going to be trying to pay attention to as we go through this is, what are we talking about that's different, new, and innovative that we haven't done, and that warrants the title mobility manager?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. We're starting at the ground floor, but we're already having conversations with other agencies and how they're doing things. This isn't just LTD, electric transit systems are looking at ways that they can extend their services and their expertise. So
thanks.
Yeah, and I look forward to talking more with you about that. Other questions? Anyone from Zoom land? So in that context, we want to move to engaging the group in a SWOT analysis, and we'll go through this and see what you have to say about in the context of LTD stepping out in this way, you know, what are some of the things we should pay attention to in terms of opportunities and threats. So I'm going to invite Andrew to come up, and you're going to raise the screen there. So how many people have been for a SWOT? That's good. So what I know about SWOT analysis is we're going to go through this, and we're going to make sure as we go that you're identifying a strength. And I may ask you to define a little bit more what you mean by that, just to try and get a little bit more. We're just going to go through. But otherwise, we're just going to throw things up as you're saying. So. You know, again, in the context of LTD, looking at opportunities to be a mobility manager, what are some of the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats?
Really quick before you start, are the folks online able to engage in this process?
I would say so.
They're
engaged.
Okay, perfect.
It's just we'll want to make sure we're watching if someone wants to add something so that we capture their input.
Awesome. I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure that since I can't see them, I just want to make sure someone
they can see them. On that TV. I'm not sure what exactly happened earlier.
Okay.
So,
but you can see them.
Yes, perfect. I can see them. Yeah. I'll keep you posted.
Thank you.
Cool. I was going to say, I would just blurt out what I need to say. Okay. Go ahead, Mike.
52 years of experience that includes some good innovation.
That's a strength.
Yeah.
Is it okay to say in mobility?
Yeah.
All right.
Among the first in the ADA before it was, the first, the ADA compliant before it was a law.
Yes.
Resources and success at securing further resources in the form of grants.
Customer focused.
Got it.
Recording in progress.
Relationships with other agencies.
Is a strength, correct?
Correct.
And that was.
I guess that could always also be an opportunity to strengthen those relationships and make sure they're partnerships as well.
Yeah, good.
We have a new general manager. That's an opportunity.
And a strength.
Yes.
Thanks.
So I certainly consider it a strength, but why is having a new GM a strength?
This GM.
Okay.
And it's an opportunity for a new beginning, a new lens, a new way of looking at things.
Good. They say cross-cultural blinders is a threat. You may not be paying attention enough to how diverse the community started to maybe be, either the Latin community or other folks that come here as students from other countries. The Asian population gets larger as the school year goes. I know I've got a friend that's moving from Haiti who needs to learn how to take the bus. So just thinking about foreign nationals that are taking the bus.
That'd be a weakness rather than a threat.
Oh, weakness. I was thinking a threat because they'll just go someplace else other than taking the bus, and that's the loss of rider.
You know, the broad topic he's raising could be both, right?
Yeah.
And I guess I'd be interested in how we word it as a weakness. I can see it, but I can't articulate. If you, Claire, have a way to describe that.
Lack of connectivity to underserved diverse populations.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay. What was the last one? Sorry.
Underserved populations.
What kind?
Underserved.
Sorry, that was
the underserved populations.
Okay.
So, hey, Tom, where would you place funding to do what you need to do here?
Right. So I would ask you to refine and specify what we mean by funding. Is it are there opportunities for funding? Issues could play out in all four of these quadrants. Yeah. But if you've got a specific one like ODOT's coming with funding, that would be great.
Yeah.
opportunity.
I'm just kidding.
I think the, you know, our a third of the folks that we are folks to be able to serve are outside of our you know, our outside walking distance, and a third of folks are beyond 3 miles from transit. We can think this positive spin is as an opportunity for us to make sure we're able to serve those folks. But I think that one of our there's an opportunity to look at what we're doing with an equity lens, as we're doing right now, which I really appreciated that that's come up in this conversation, has come up over and over again. So our opportunity to be thinking about folks furthest from opportunity to be able to access transit. And then also that being our weakness is that we are missing out and thinking of populations specifically who more than likely those folks who are within that outside of the walking distance are people that probably are living in an area that is lower income, and so they rely more heavily on this. So there's an opportunity for us to be able to be aware of that and engage using the equity lens, think about the folks that are furthest from accessing our services, and then that weakness also are those folks that are out. So again, sorry, those two things, dichotomy of that, that just putting that out there, people so keep thinking about how we're
engaging. I put not serving many parts of the region, and then not serving lower income populations in those areas.
Yeah. And then again, the opportunity to continue to look at all of, make all of our decisions with a deepening our equity lens and really, you know, refining that so that we're thinking, if we're serving folks furthest from opportunity, we're gonna serve everyone else. I think that has come up in this conversation as well, so.
Mm-hmm. I would say as a weakness, as well as not saying what we've done. I bring this up from time to time. It's like, I know from what I've been exposed to so far on SPC being involved with LTD, I say it all the time, don't hesitate to pat yourself on the back, you know, when it comes to what you've done so far to help these communities or what you have planned to help these communities, because if they don't hear it, they don't know. So I think, not putting it out as a weakness, not saying it enough.
Can that be seen as an opportunity then as well?
Yeah, I really think it is an opportunity. I really truly think it is. As I know, just as an example, when I lived in Minneapolis, which is a very diverse community, we upped our viewership when I worked at Care 11 and I did the creative for that. Mm-hmm. We were very specific about our marketing approach, making sure that we were very diverse in the population approach versus just hiring just regular actors for whoever. We literally tried to find as many diverse people in the population as we did our marketing, and it really helped our numbers.
Yes.
So that leads me to another weakness, which is general organizational communication with the community. Was on your list to look at.
I'm not sure which box this fits into, but during the 15 years that I've been affiliated with LGD, it seems to me that we have gone from a position of where's our next MX line going to go to what's the best transit solution that for whatever situation that we face. We're not assuming that MX. That our job is to figure out where to put an MX line. Our job is to figure out.
We're broadening our horizons.
What's the best solution for every transit situation? I'm not sure quite how to characterize it or which box it fits in, but it seems to me that that's a transition that the organization is still in the process of going through.
Put it as a strength.
I think you just spoke to the whole idea of LTD capability.
Okay.
Well, I'll just name the other elephant in the room in terms of threats, you know, anti-public transit sentiment.
Would you go as far as say anti-LTD?
I Sure.
I think there's a difference. You know, there's, you can be against transit in a broad sense, but are there?
But I think any trans, I think some of what I'm speaking to, any transit agency would
okay.
have the same yeah. experience.
The arrogant bureaucrats pretty much applies to us. I think that we're the targets of that.
Proud member of the Trans Industrial Complex.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that it's personal to LD. I guess
right. okay.
some of it might be, but
yeah.
broader.
No, that's good.
I think another opportunity would be to engage more voices at the table of like users of the service of our services. Like I would love to see more folks at this table who are from some of the marginalized groups that are thinking about engaging. So yeah, just opportunity to engage more voices, more diverse voices, however you want to frame that.
Sorry, I'm putting my mic on. I think also under opportunities, you know, you spoke to the bike share and there's other programmatic innovations that could be spurred by this work, right? So mm-hmm. opportunity, I guess, to ignite further innovation in terms of potential partnerships.
Good word.
I think it's an opportunity, sorry, just like, again, there's a benefit for us being in this room, but helping folks kind of understand, you know, I hear folks, you know, folks talk about, why aren't the bus, all the buses electric? And so there's a lot of, like, there's a whole narrative conversation, but being able to, and I know that does take resources and other things, but kind of like we have a magic wand, like helping people understand just kind of what goes into that, you know, and being able to have conversations around what are some other things, like, do you ride the bus? Because that can help to reduce emissions and things like that. So just an opportunity to be able to kind of share that story or tell that story to the community so people understand everything that goes into the planning around transit. And again, that's probably Pat's job, and I'm adding more to a marketing budget, but yeah, just helping people understand that, because I think when you kind of start seeing everything that goes into it, it makes a lot more sense. But the general public, I think they just think you all can just go buy a new bus that's electric and plug it in and everything is good, and we know that's not the case.
Right, that's good. Other thoughts?
Another potential under threats, you know, right now we're in a phase at the federal level where there's, you know, funding coming down and a perspective about supporting public transit. And so political landscape could change.
So that's the, or, is that the threat that it might change?
The threat is a change in political
landscape. Yeah.
The opportunity is what's going on right now, which is, you know, Federal Transit Administration that's excited about supporting local communities.
Good. What I would give this as a strength here, I think that LTD is open for change, or at least adaptable for change that could be coming down the pipe. I mean, those are some of the conversations we're having now, talking about electric buses and diesel buses and so forth, exploring those options.
Good.
Sort of along that line, it seems to me that LTD now is projecting an openness to critique that hasn't always been present. An openness to invite critique. And actually seek assertively to hear from people that might have ideas about the way things should be done.
So I said, openness to criticism, invite, seek out critics.
Yeah.
Okay. Another threat I'm thinking about, and in light of the economy not being as, let's just say, with inflation and so forth, that could, things could, you know, change pretty dramatic, that could affect how we maintain, from a cash flow standpoint, how we maintain or main or keep up with our systems and so forth. And again, that's just me thinking just off the top of my head how the economy could impact us in a negative way that could put some limitations on what we're trying to achieve.
Good. Pete, you've been
just a thought that bubbles to my mind as we work on projects that are more innovative and stuff is making sure we don't run into the threat would be running afoul of federal regulation while we try to add more inventive things.
Not sure how exactly to phrase that.
Running afoul of federal regulations.
Maintaining compliance with federal regulations.
I would just put down federal regulations. Okay.
Anything else? This is pretty good.
I'd like to put one more strength in there. I think, at least from my standpoint, the operation of our of the services that we have now are relatively safe. And I think that most commuters feel pretty, or the ones who are using the service, feel pretty safe in that either environment or whatever, you know, place they're trying to go to, because I have heard, and I think everybody here has heard of issues happening like in Portland and other big cities where the safety factor around buses can impact the commuters that's riding there such that it would decline. But I think here at LTD, the safety around riding the buses is relatively a strong point.
So another factor is that Peter DeFazio is no longer our congressional representative. And on the other hand, Val Hoyle is our congressional representative. So I'm not sure quite how to characterize it, but it seems like it should be noted because it's a significant change. So it could be
short-term weakness. Yeah.
Long-term, well, there's going to be a learning opportunity. I'd say more opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't be in Congress for as long as Peter was there and not make some enemies. And Val was starting with someone with a clean slate.
It's almost like saying, in that same scenario, there's a learning opportunity that could be a weakness for us. But at the same time, there's a leveraging opportunity where she could actually piggyback off of what the previous congressman was there and piggyback off of that to propel and go a little bit further.
They did much better than me.
Yeah, that's an opportunity for sure. Other thoughts at this point? I don't want to drag it out longer.
Did someone say seasonal ridership as a threat?
No.
The only reason I say that is I think about the warmer the weather gets, and I've heard something about them upping the Lona bike thing coming up this summer. Like, that's supposed to be expanded. That could be a threat to ridership, you know, as the weather gets nicer. People might take that as more of an opportunity versus taking the bus.
Yeah, is that a threat to transit ridership, but not a threat to mobility, correct?
I guess not really. True. Okay. I was just going outside of the box that everybody goes outside of. So.
But I mean, you do raise an interesting question as people, as there are more things to choose from, some people may say, I'd rather share a bike
or share an Uber or.
Yeah, that's true. It would, well, this is your SWOT analysis, but Marty, would you say in the context of what we're talking about that really this could be an opportunity?
Could very much be an opportunity.
Yeah. Okay.
I think there's opportunities also for messaging that as the options become more numerous and more available to people, how do we let them know what the options are? How do they access them? How do they pay for them? All of that those are opportunities for public awareness.
Yeah, definitely. Good. Well.
Yeah, just like kind of piggybacking off of this, Marianne.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that was kind of a big part of this is that messaging piece where as a mobility manager, it's how are we talking about all the ways that we can reduce that the carbon footprint by, and does like LTD, I mean, this is not what LTD is saying, but as an example, we don't really care how you're moving around, but there's different ways to move that are helping to reduce that carbon footprint. And yeah, how that message plays in that we have all these partnerships and opportunities to engage. So yeah, that opportunity of those, I think we have it on there, the deepening partnerships kind of plays into that, how all these pieces fit together. So I think that's on there. I can't see as far.
Can I make a slight leap? And because you're talking about messaging and all the new options, and what I was thinking, but I don't want to leap too far, is maybe there's an opportunity for LTD to take more of a leadership role as a trusted community organization on all of those things.
Yes.
In helping
what Andrew said,
the community navigate through the change.
So along those lines, I can remember a time when other community agencies would go to LTD not to talk with them about transportation, but to seek their advice on land use planning or things on which this agency has become expert. And I'm not sure how much that currently exists. I remember a time when it was fairly common, but I haven't heard of it recently.
Well, I'll say, I mean, not that we've figured everything out, but
a lot
of the active plans that are in place are more integrated than they've ever been. So I think that's certainly an opportunity to leverage, right?
Well, I'm thinking about LTD being viewed as a resource by other community agencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of your expertise and experience. So it seems to me that there's an opportunity to recapture some of that.
Would you say to strengthen we have it, or it's an opportunity that we should rebuild?
I'm more the latter.
Okay.
Maybe you need an orange one right in between.
Good. Other
because
thoughts?
Because that not only requires expertise, but it requires respect and requires a perception of accessibility.
Right. Great. So we're at a stopping point maybe. So we're going to take this work, summarize it, we'll get it back out to you, but we're also going to create something that rolls what you've added here into kind of the work we've been doing internally. We've done a couple of other SWOT analyses. And so you'll see your contribution and then just the whole thing, because I think that might be of interest to you. Otherwise?
Just a process observation. When I looked at the agenda online, maybe I missed this, but it looked like there was not going to be opportunities for input tonight. It was going to be mostly staff downloading to the group, and I'm really glad that we did this, because to me, this is what SBC should be doing.
Absolutely. And I did note that in the AIS, Mike, but yeah, otherwise it looked like we're telling you. And okay, well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Andrew, for taking notes. Okay. And right now we are basically at the end of the agenda, unless anyone on the committee has anything else to add. All right. Well, thank you all for your time today, and we're going to go ahead and adjourn at 6:55. Thanks. Anyone on the call, since I can't see comments or questions or anything from anyone online?
I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
One more thing, sorry, folks. I was just building up to the end here. Tom has one.
I just want to say in the AIS for my item, there's a link to a federal report that summarized or synthesized a number of mobility on demand. They call it Sandbox. So they gave these grants out across the country. People try to put things. Interesting read in the consultation.
Thank you for that, Tom. I appreciate more resources for our team to kind of deepen our knowledge and understanding of transit and everything to come. Thank you, folks. We're going to go ahead and adjourn at 6:56. Thank you all.
Thank you all.
Thanks.
Thank you.